back to badquaker.com. This is episode 12 of our podcast. Today is Wednesday, July 6th, 2011. And I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
We teased a couple things. Last week we talked about cheese and the hoarding of cheese. We wanted to touch on that today. And I forgot last week to read a listener email. So I've got that here. Listen, see, that's mail. That's a piece of paper. I printed it out.
Did you hear that, people? He's against trees. He hates them.
Actually, if they made paper out of hemp, never mind. So,
what's that? I think the DEA just knocked on the door.
Not the topic this week. I did want to get this letter out of the way, I mean this email out of the way right away, because I did miss it last week. I meant to cover it. I'm not going to read the whole email. This is in reference to the confidence scams that we talked about on one of our podcasts, or con scams, or cons, and how cons work, and how they, and how honest people and dishonest people and so forth. So basically what the listener is saying is that a truly honest person wouldn't get caught in the violin con. Well, let me just recap the violin con. So maybe if somebody didn't hear the other podcast, they're not going to have any idea what the violin con is. The violin con, the classic is the violin, but you can use anything. You can use a watch, you can use a briefcase, you can use any object that you can convince someone is worth a lot of money.
Right.
You can use a violin case. You don't necessarily need to even have a violin in it, especially if the case is lockable. You can have a locked violin case with a bag of rocks in it. It doesn't matter, you know. But anyway, this is how the con works, and I'll use the classic violin. So you have two operatives and one victim. The victim is a business owner. It could be a grocery store. It could be a liquor store. It could be a restaurant. We'll use restaurant. Let's say a restaurant owner has his little restaurant. It's in a small, and this is better in a big town, but wherever. So the restaurant owner has his little restaurant there. One of your operatives walks into the restaurant, asks for the restaurant owner, hands him the violin, and says, "I just found this on the ground outside your door. It probably belongs to somebody. I'm sure they lost it, and they'll be asking for it." The restaurant owner is going to be a little confused at this point. Now, you have to have some timing here. About this time, the phone rings for the restaurant, and whoever answers the phone tells the restaurant owner, "I've got someone on the phone that they're very desperate. They left their violin here, and they're hoping we can help them get it." So the person calling, of course, is your other operative. So the operative on the phone explains to the restaurant manager or restaurant owner that the violin is very, very expensive. It's worth a lot of money. They're very concerned about it. Would they please hold on to it? The violin owner can't get down there for like an hour, or you could say whatever time frame you want to say. But as soon as he gets there, he'll give a $200 reward for the trouble of keeping the violin. Of course, the store owner says, "We have the violin. It's right here. I'll have it waiting for you." The finder of the violin, your first operative, says, "I can't wait. I have a business meeting right now, or I have an interview right now, or I have to catch the bus right now, or whatever. I can't wait. Can we split the reward? You know, if you give me $100, you can keep the other $100. You get the $200, and you know, you can advance that to me. I'm out of here."
Right.
So the business owner or the restaurant owner sees the opportunity to make $100 off of the violin, and so he pulls $200 out of his till, out of the
$100.
$100 out, and he gives it to the guy. The guy leaves. Nobody shows up for the violin because the violin is a piece of garbage. They spent like $5 for it out at the pawn shop.
Right.
So they just got $100 from the guy, and it cost them the price of a cheap violin. So our listener writes in to say, He basically outlined the what he's talking about with the con. And he says, I'd like to suggest to you that if the restaurant owner were indeed an honest man, he would not assume that he could take possession of the violin and then claim the reward. At best, he could tell the man claiming to be the violin's owner, and offering the reward, that he knows who does have the violin and offer to put the two parties in contact with one another. In short, a truly honest man will not expect to profit at the expense of another through deceit. Imagining myself as the honest man, I can say that I would handle it this way and thus be immune to the con job. And that's coming from Jay. Thanks, Jay, for writing that. And he's right in the sense that the proper thing to do, if as long as the store owner could keep his head and think the thing through and realize he didn't really deserve any of the reward because he didn't find it, so, you know, just offer to put the two people together. And so take the guy's phone number or whatever and say, okay, well, he'll contact you later or whatever. Or offer to take the money and the finder can then return to the restaurant anytime he wants and take the money or whatever. But there's, you know, you could avoid the con by not being lured in to the con.
But part of the thing with that is it's hard to, you know, it's hard to do that when you don't know that there's a con being put out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, if the con men are slick enough, then it's very difficult to recognize what is the moral position and what's not.
Because even if you don't feel like you deserve any of the reward for it, mm-hmm. You know, you can still have the con man be like, well, you know, I really need to go catch my bus. I have an interview. I'm new in town. We're running low on money. You know, mm-hmm. I really have to have this job, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, say, oh, $200, man, that would really help my family out, but I really can't afford to stay and wait for it.
Yeah.
You know?
It's all according to how good the con men are and how distracted the victim is.
Mm-hmm.
The more distracted, let's say, in that restaurant situation, it's the middle of rush hour. Now, here's the key. If you get them too busy, they're not going to want to be involved at all.
Right.
Even a good person is just going to tell you, look, I don't care about the violin. It's not my business. Here's the phone and go back to, you know, slapping hash or whatever.
Right.
But so the good con man team has to have perfect timing with a moment when the shop owner is busy but not too busy. And then play on their mercy that you really need for them to do this, you know, as a favor.
Mm-hmm.
But Jay's right. You know, if a person checks themselves and really lays down solid morals and says, you know, I'm not going to take a risk of taking money out of my business no matter what.
Right.
That's wrong. I'm not going to take money for something that I didn't earn. That's wrong. And if you can hold yourself to those kinds of morals, then you win,
right.
And the con man loses.
Right. The difficult part in all of it is that this exact situation can happen and not be a con.
Yeah.
And it really be somebody's prized violin, and they really show up and give you a reward.
Yeah.
And that is more likely to happen than it being a con.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are good. People have a tendency to be good.
Yeah.
And that's why cons work. Because people are good. If nobody was good, if nobody ever came and you know, fulfilled that end of the bargain,
mm-hmm.
people would never expect that they would, and yeah. cons wouldn't work.
Yep. Cons assume people are good.
Right.
And they play off of that weakness that people are good.
Yeah.
Just not good enough. Not consistent. People are not consistent. Conditions change, and that's what the con depends on. He depends on a distraction or something else to throw the person's mind off to not recognize the moral position and not do the right thing. We did have another listener with a different question. This came from Facebook, one of our Facebook person who liked us on Facebook. I don't know how you say that. It's like the terminology for Facebook baffles me. But the listener said, our son listened to your latest podcast, and he asked, how can you get an authoritarian to think libertarian thoughts? I'm not sure how old the child is, but that's a pretty good question, no matter how old you are. Mm-hmm. And that is the great question for us. How can we reveal this to the authoritarian without beating them up, without sounding like we're crazy, without accusing them of supporting the system,
and without getting them angry to the point where they try to attack us?
Yeah, that never works out good. It is difficult. The easy answer is that when the cops are busting through your door and you've done nothing wrong, and they're sticking a gun to your head and putting you on the ground because they got the wrong address for their, you know, from their informant, everybody's a libertarian.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
the old saying about the military and God is that there are no atheists in a foxhole. Well, I had a really good friend who was a good solid atheist and a seriously hardened combat vet from Vietnam. And he would use that argument regularly, saying, it's just not legitimate. I was crawling through tunnels in Vietnam with a pistol in one hand and a flashlight in the other, and I never blinked in his atheism and not believing that there was a God. So that old thing about there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole, I believe the guy. He was not a person who would lie.
Right.
You know, I have to say this about atheists that I've known. I've known a lot of people who were atheists. I've known a lot of people who were theists. I've known a lot of people who really didn't care and didn't really think about it. But there are a few atheists who stand out in my mind as being some of the most moral people I've ever met in my life. And he was one of them. He was peer level that I was working with in the aerospace industry. And he was just a solid guy. I would have put my life in his hands at the drop of a hat. If he told you something, that was a fact. Mm-hmm. It was just that way. But anyway, that was way off the track there. But my statement about everybody's a libertarian when a cop's got a gun to their head, when they're innocent, you
right.
know, when their house has been invaded, when they're innocent, and you feel that invasion, when you want to do something simple like take an airplane flight to someplace for whatever reason, and you see what the TSA is doing to people, deep inside, lots of us mm-hmm. have those libertarian thoughts that just come boiling to the surface. And for many people, they've maybe never thought of that before until they see it firsthand, until they experience it.
I think that's one of the most direct ways that you can get someone to begin examining the state is to show it to them.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time you get a chance, you know, we have to make the state as transparent as possible. We have to say, look, this is what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and don't go into, you know, oh, well, they are spraying chemtrails and they're doing this and they're aliens. And whether you believe that or not, don't go into the realm of speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Stick with, look at this video of this person, this cop attacking this 14-year-old girl. Look at this video of this TSA person attacking, you know, look at mm-hmm. this video. This is actually what is happening. We have direct proof
yeah.
that this is what is going on.
Jack Spierko over at thesurvivalpodcast.com, Jack has a really interesting piece of advice on this, and I think it's maybe some of the best on the topic I've ever heard. What Jack talks about doing, and he's on a slightly different topic, but it's the same principle, because as Jack says, it's hard to be what he calls a modern survivalist or a prepper, which is not the person in Montana in the cave. It's someone who makes sure that they have a full pantry, they make sure they have life insurance, they make sure that their bills are paid, and things like this, so that when something happens in their life, they're prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jack says it's hard to be that and not a libertarian. And it's hard to be a thorough or a consistent libertarian and not make preparations in your life for things where the state fails you.
Right.
So these two things go hand in hand. And Jack's statement on it is, the best way to deal with people like this is to present them questions. You give them a piece of a fact, and then you present them a question. Like you might say, in Jack's case, he would talk about, like, when that ice storm came through all the way up through Kentucky and cut off so many people for, I can't remember now, but it was like a week or 2 weeks or something in the dead middle of winter with no electricity.
Mm-hmm.
And mention something like that and then say, wow, what would you do if something like that happened? And it gets the person's mind rolling. And what you're actually doing by giving them a question, you're forcing them to think of an answer.
Right.
Well, there's only one answer. You have to be prepared ahead of time. You can't become prepared for an ice storm when the ice storm hits.
Right.
You look like all those bozos at the grocery store buying eggs and milk. You know, what are you going to do with all that bread? How's that going to get you through the ice storm? You know,
right.
A generator might be handy. And it's kind of the same way with libertarianism. If you can, rather than beating someone with, you know, you got to be free, if you can present something like what you're saying with the TSA videos or the police abuse or like the absurdity. Remember when they were dancing at the Jefferson Memorial?
Mm-hmm.
And the absurd reaction of the state was to bring in cops with fully armed with assault rifles and cops on horseback.
Yeah.
Because there are people dancing at the Jefferson Memorial. So you actually got horses pooping on the Jefferson Memorial in order so that people don't disrespect it by dancing.
Yeah.
You know, if Jefferson were there, he'd probably shoot the guy on the horse. But if we can present these things and then point out the absurdity and then question, what do you think about that? Or what do you think this is? Or why do you think they didn't react this way?
Mm-hmm.
Or why is it, with a classic with the increasing police state, you know, it's really easy for a libertarian to point at the increasing police state and scream, the jackbooted thugs are coming to get us. But, you know, why? I have an article in my mind that I haven't written yet, so now I'm picking a piece of it out. How did we get to where we are? Is it all because of 9/11? No, they were trying this in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The militarization of the police forces were taking place in the late 80s and all through the 90s.
Yep.
It's not new. It's becoming more obvious now because it's so abundant.
Right.
But this was taking place all through the late 80s and all through the 90s. And the reason why is because the state cracked down on the cocaine dealers in the early 80s, due directly to the war on drugs, inspired by a couple popular movies mm-hmm. that focused on the drug trade, and a TV show, Miami Vice, that glamorized the drug trade, specifically cocaine. And it caused such an outrage in the 80s. People thought, you know, there was a lot of hype about cocaine in the early 80s. And this impression that there was this abundance of cocaine, it was all Hollywood hype. And then the Reagan administration decides, oh, we'll have a war against drugs. We'll resurrect Nixon's war against drugs. And so they started to go out really hard after these cocaine dealers. What did the cocaine dealers do? Well, they just stopped dealing cocaine, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, they went to a more compact version and a far more destructive version of cocaine, crack cocaine, which those of us on the West Coast used to call rock cocaine. So they went after it became more profitable to deal with the more compact crack cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, crack cocaine's way more addictive, has a way stronger reaction, causes a lot more physical damage to the users. So now we have just taken casual cocaine users and made hard-time crack addicts out of them. Now, they're even more desperate to get the money to buy the crack with.
Mm-hmm.
The black market is still exploding.
Yep.
So the now, the profits are even higher for the drug dealers. Well, they're going to guard their supply, and so houses started to get fortified so that they couldn't have drug raids. But not drug raids from the cops, drug raids from other gangs
right.
and other criminals.
Right.
So they harden their house to protect themselves from other criminals, except when the cops show up, they can't break the door down. So what's the response? Well, we have to get a battering ram. Well, and the guys inside now have machine guns because they have to defend themselves against other drug dealers. Except now when the cops are knocking on the door, they're facing machine guns. They're facing assault rifles. Not really machine guns. They're not up there with, you know, Ma Deuce or whatever. But they're facing more advanced armament because these drug dealers have to defend themselves against other drug dealers. And the cops get caught in the middle of this. Well, the cops, what's their reaction? Well, you have to militarize the cops. So each step that the state takes advances the war, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
onto a new level. The difference is the drug dealers are making a vast amount of money off of this.
Yeah.
And every time the state ratchets it up, they make more money.
Yeah, the state can never, ever attack anything on the open market. You can't win against the open market.
Yeah, it's like holding back the rain, you know? It just can't be done. Anyway, that's way off on the rant,
but the drug war is a great place to start with statists, because I don't think I've met anybody who looks at the drug war and goes, yeah, we're winning. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're doing this right. Yeah, this is how it ought to be.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the argument always goes back to, well, we have to keep it away from the children. Well, how do you keep Jack Daniels away from the children?
Right.
You know, how do you keep beer away from the children? What's easier? I've said this a million times. What's easier for a 14-year-old to get? A bottle of Jack Daniels or a joint?
Mm-hmm.
A joint is easy to get.
Yep, because drug dealers will sell to anybody.
Yeah.
But a storefront won't.
And legitimate business people don't sell substances like that to minors.
Right.
And here's this crazy thing. If you could get in a Wayback Machine and go to the 1880s or something like that, before there were age limitation laws, you still couldn't go into a bar as a 14-year-old and buy alcohol.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it. They just didn't do it. It wasn't done.
Yeah.
I'm using up all our time. We're not getting to cheese.
Cheese.
We have cheese, to talk cheese, about cheese. Cheese.
Got a quick minute here. I'm going to talk about the cheese that we didn't get to in the last episode. We kind of teased about it.
Fascism.
So apparently, and I know this is going to come to a huge shock to people, apparently the United States government is fascist. I know, I didn't believe it myself, but apparently we are.
You mean that there are businesses, corporations, that have specific advantages over their competitors because the government helps them, and the government is strengthened by those very same corporations?
As it turns out, yes. So,
in America?
In America, nonetheless. So, we've got a two-sided issue here. On the one hand, the United States government is pushing a low-fat, high-carbohydrate diet as the cure-all to obesity. Which, can we all take
opposite.
A minute to laugh, but sure.
More grain for the cattle.
Yeah. So, they've got that going on. They've got the whole saturated fats are evil.
Government zombies want you to eat grains.
And, you know, despite the fact that all modern science points to the fact that saturated fat is not bad for human consumption, the government still wants to hold on to that silly idea. Because the state, you know, isn't really up to date with the latest science. So they've got that. They've got their whole fat is bad, obesity epidemic, you know, Michelle Obama trying to save all the little kids from being fat.
By calling her own girls fat.
Right.
Did you see that?
Yeah. Her girls who are not at any way, shape, or form fat.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we have the, let's see, let me get this right.
What was the fascist cheese organization called?
In 1995, the government created Dairy Management, Inc.
Now, that sounds like a private company.
Yeah.
No.
No.
Not a private
company. And this is the same corporation that did the Got Milk campaign, particularly focusing on school children.
Advertising aimed at school children? I thought that was evil.
Yeah. So,
because when McDonald's does it, it's evil.
Right.
And when General Mills does it, it's evil.
Right.
But when a government agency does it, or a government front agency does it, then it's okay.
Right, right. Well, we have to, you know, help the kids. So they've got this whole thing, and just the one point out, Domino's. Domino's has this
Domino's
new...
Pizza, Domino's not Domino's pizza. Sugar.
Right, right. Domino's Pizza has this new campaign that they're pushing where they've revamped their pizza, which... cost $12 million. I think it was $12 million. $12 million in marketing.
Mm-hmm. To rebrand or to reintroduce the Domino's pizza.
Yeah, this $12 million marketing campaign.
Uh-huh.
That was entirely paid for by Dairy Management.
Shocking.
Yeah.
I'm shocked to find out there's fascism going on here.
Yeah, so this pizza has 40% more cheese.
You think it might be better?
So...
And then they do a taste comparison. You put 40% more cheese and you hand it to somebody. So, what do you think? Is it a good pizza or what? Well, of course!
It's 40% more cheese!
Duh! Bacon!
You could put 40% more cheese on cardboard and it would taste better.
Here's this rock. Now, here's 40% more cheese on the rock.
Which do you like better? Well, I wonder.
So they're messing with them. With not only are they interfering with the dairy market, not only have they entirely distorted and taken over the dairy market, not only do they use force to keep competition out of the dairy market, ask an Amish,
mm-hmm.
Not only all of that that's going on, not only do they have caves filled with hoarded cheese, they are actually interfering with the fast food market by pushing cheese and paying for advertising for a cheese pushing product.
Yeah. And then they turn right around and they tell you that you're lazy and that you're unmotivated and that the reason that you can't lose weight is because you eat too much fat.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they spend $12 million ensuring that you're going to eat more cheese.
But where do they come up with that $12 million?
Let's see.
Where did the government get its $12 million? It stole it at the point of a gun from each one of us.
Yeah.
Or it printed it out of thin air, which is the same as stealing it from us because it devalues the dollar.
Yep.
Or perhaps they borrowed it from the Chinese.
But however they did it, it's theft.
Yeah.
Because if they borrowed it from the Chinese...
It has to be paid back at some point in time.
The Chinese stole that money from their people.
Oh, but it's different because they're communists and they own their people.
Right.
And we're over here. We're fascist in this country, so that's different?
Right.
Or is it that socialism is socialism? Whether we call it communist China or whether it's the United States and we lie to ourselves and tell ourselves we're free... When in fact, this is a fascist country. Fascism, not meaning we line up a certain group of people and gas them. That's not what fascism is. Mm-hmm. Fascism is a political marriage between the state and select industries or businesses so that you have corporations with advantages given to them directly by the government, and the government then feeds off those corporations. And the marriage of these two makes... choice businesses stronger and makes the government stronger and weeds out competition. That's what fascism is. Fascism is not marching goose step and putting your hand out straight and doing these things. Fascism is the economic system that the United States functions under and has for over 100 years.
Yep. And when you... It is really something that you need to understand at your very core, that when you buy anything in this country,
in the regular market,
right, unless you are dealing with something like a small farmer's market or where you're individually dealing with the person who made it, mm-hmm. if you're going to Walmart, if you're going to a fast food restaurant, if you're going to any restaurant, if you're going to, you know, any grocery store, any clothing store, anything of that nature,
yeah.
you are participating in a fascist society.
Which ultimately is stealing in order to do that.
Yes.
Somehow we think, well, yeah, but we... You know, I go to Walmart, I go to Kmart, I go to the grocery store, I go to Kroger, I rarely go to McDonald's, but, or any of those other places, but sometimes I do. Because we have to function, we have to live in this society. Mm-hmm. But every penny we cannot give to those people is a free penny. Mm-hmm. And if we can trade that among ourselves, either without cash at all, or, you know, the perfect world... I don't know that Bitcoin is the latest thing. Have you seen Bitcoin? I haven't really checked into it. I don't know if it'll function or not. But anything you can do to not trade using Federal Reserve dollars mm-hmm. is literally pulling the wealth away from the dragon's lair and bringing it back into society.
Yep.
And anything you can do for somebody on a bartering level, whether that means, hey, you need your roof fixed, I know how to fix the roof. I'll fix your roof. You get your son to mow my lawn all the summer. You know,
right.
Whatever can be done on that level, that's what starves the beast. And I also wanted to mention, rather than attacking, like we've said before, don't attack the state. You just make it stronger. But the state attacks itself constantly.
Mm-hmm.
It's self-contradictive, like what you're talking about there, where they actually spend money to tell people, cut fat out of your diet, and at the same time, they pay and use their influence to get a business to push more cheese.
Right.
At the same time that they're telling us more fat is bad. They're telling us, don't eat the cheese and eat the cheese. Don't eat the cheese and eat the cheese. And they're spending money in both directions to say these opposite stories.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unstable. There's no way it can continue.
The state cannot, it is not capable of maintaining a balance.
Right.
You know, it is wildly unstable
mm-hmm.
and
self-contradictive on every level.
And much like a fire, it will burn as long as you continue to feed it.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to actively put out a fire.
Right.
All you have to do is not feed it.
Yeah.
And it will go out.
And stay out of its reach.
Just let it be.
Yeah.
Don't give it any more fuel. And don't let it consume you.
Yeah.
And eventually, it will consume itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A fire is a good way to look at it. I still like dragon as imagery. Because a fire, you think of a campfire. Oh, what could possibly be wrong with a campfire? That's a lovely little fire. But a dragon, you know, dragon's scary. Except the little picture of the baby dragon that I put on the website. You saw that?
That was cute.
But it's just a little dragon. Yeah. The state, even when it's little, is a nasty monster. If you don't believe me, go to a city council meeting and watch what goes on there.
Yeah.
It's just a big bucket of filth and evil. That's what city council meetings are. Because it's a little tiny bit of the state.
Yep.
Well, do we need to insult anybody else?
I think that's pretty good for today.
I want to throw out a quick teaser. We've gone way over on our time again. But I want to throw out a quick teaser. I've got two more interviews that were lining up. I think you're going to find them very fascinating. One interview I've teased before about a gentleman in the law enforcement industry that's going to be kind enough to come on and do an interview with us. That would make the first interview we did was former law enforcement, current private security, Blackwater employee. Then the second interview we did was a active duty Army major. We're lining up one more private security individual, but he's engaged right now, and it will be some time before he's back in the U.S. and where he can get to a landline and do the interview. But we've got another law enforcement personnel that I'm lining up, very libertarian and very, well, you'll see. I won't speak for him. But the bonus is we have an actual published author, multiple published author, and I'm not going to say a name yet. There's some people who are going to be listening to this who know who I'm talking about, because when I got the email back from him and he had agreed to do the interview, I about jumped out of my skin. But we have a published author and recognized individual in the freedom movement and in the liberty movement. You're going to know him when I tease the next time. You're going to know who I'm talking about. We're looking at a couple weeks from now, maybe 3 to 4 weeks out before we'll get that interview. And so I'm not going to tell you who it is, but I'm excited.
The moral of the story, kids, is if you have a podcast and you'd love to have somebody on, send them an email. It never hurts to ask.
Yeah, I never would have thought this person would have just said, sure, I'd love to do it. But he did. And so I'm very excited. Thanks a lot, folks, for listening to our podcast. We do appreciate our listeners. Please give us an email. Even if you just are saying, hey, we're listening. We don't get a lot of numbers back from, like, all the stuff that we send out to iTunes. We have no way of knowing who's listening. We do know that our audience is growing from badquaker.com itself, but we don't know how many people we're getting from iTunes. I know that there's a way to figure that out, but our admin hasn't quite got around to that yet. She has a full-time job and just volunteers to help out on this, so we're limited at this point in time with what we can tell as to who our listeners are. So drop us an email. Kai is Kai at badquaker.com. I'm Ben, B-E-N, at badquaker.com. And the admin is badquaker at badquaker.com. If you have suggestions for the website or whatever, you can drop them to the admin, or you can email me or Kai, either one, with any questions or feedback, and we do appreciate hearing from you. And we might even read your email like we did Jay's. But either way, give us a drop us a note. Mm-hmm. We do appreciate you listening. And I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
Thanks a lot, folks.